A Friendship Album Christmas, 1932. A Quilting Story by Frances O'Rourke Dow. Emmeline Grangerfield just couldn't decide what kind of Christmas card to send this year. Thomas liked the one with the merry colonial couple striding across a snow-covered bridge, but Emmeline thought the woman looked too much like Little Bo Peep, with her poofy pantaloons and frilled bonnet. On the other hand, she thought the card featuring a fashionably dressed woman being pulled along by her dog as an armload of wrapped gifts went flying was rather clever. The only problem was the Grangerfields didn't have a dog. Emmeline worried that some of their friends might find the card confusing. "Maybe we should send a Santa Claus card," she mused to her sister-in-law, Florence, who was sitting on the sofa across from her, piecing a quilt block. "There are some really darling Art Deco Santas." Emmeline turned the page in the sample book she'd brought home the day before from the stationer's. "I do like a snow scene, don't you?" When no reply was made, she put the book down on the coffee table and crossed the room. "Do I need to throw a sock at you to get your attention?" "You're not wearing socks," Florence pointed out, still not looking up from her piecing, "so that's not much of a threat." "What are you working on anyway?" Emmeline sat down next to her sister-in-law. "Those prints are awfully cheerful." "'Tis the season." Florence held up a nearly completed shooting star block. "Some of the girls in my literary club are putting together quilts to give the children at the orphanage. We're trying to get 5 tops done in time to send them over to Martha Leary's shop for quilting. A few of the ladies are knitting socks, so we'll have quite a jolly package to deliver on Christmas morning." "Oh, that's a marvelous idea. But what does making quilts have to do with literature?" "Nothing, really. But Gladys Ballantine had the wonderful idea of paying her niece to read to us while we stitch, so it's all on the up and up." "Do you mind if I write about your plan in my column this week?" Emmeline asked. "I've been looking for some fresh topics, and I do think it's nice that your club is making quilts for orphans." Florence considered this proposal. "I suppose not. It might inspire others to do the same. In fact, I'll give you the address of our club secretary, in case some of your readers are interested in joining our cause, or joining our literary club, for that matter." Well, there was one chore Emmeline could tick off her list. Coming up with topics for her weekly Quilt Along with Emmeline column in the Milton Falls Gazette had become more difficult the last few months. Usually she wrote about the latest adventures of her quilting bee, but that was growing tedious, especially because she wasn't actually in a quilting bee, not a real one anyway. The group she reported on was largely fictional, and lately its members had begun bickering and nitpicking in print over the silliest things. Frankly, Emmeline was ready to boot them out and create a new cast of characters, but her column was so popular she didn't know if that would be the wisest course. But she could send them away for the holidays, now couldn't she? Send them away early, even. Emmeline liked this idea enormously. She'd temporarily dispatch Millie Poshtone and Alicia Startmore and devote her December columns to Christmas musings and how to stitch up pretty little gifts for friends and neighbors. Perhaps each column could end with a fun holiday recipe or two. Speaking of which, "Have I told you that Thomas and I have decided to have the Christmas party on the 23rd this year instead of the 24th? She said to Florence. "I was hoping you could give me some ideas for hors d'oeuvres. Fresh ideas, I mean. I'm so terribly bored by salmon canapés and tomato baskets." "Oyster toast?" Florence suggested. "Tiresome. A cheese ball, perhaps. I went to a bridge party at Sally Crutcher's last week, and she served a cheese ball rolled in nuts. It was awfully tasty." "Well, Thomas would like that," Emmeline agreed, walking over to the secretary for her pencil and pad. "But I want something no one else is serving this season." "Well, how about a pineapple dish? I saw a recipe in some magazine or another for pineapple wrapped in bacon. You can get it in cans nowadays, you know. Well, the pineapple, not the bacon." "Oh, now I like that idea," Emmeline agreed, writing it down. "What do you think about shrimp cocktail?" "Oh, I love it, and I don't think it's been done to death. So, will anyone interesting besides me be at the party this year?" Emmeline sank into the club chair across from Florence. "Probably not, I'm afraid. We have to invite all of Thomas's business associates and his friends from City Hall. I hate to admit it, but for the social event of the season, my Christmas party is a bit of a bore." Oh, surely you can invite a few lively types, Florence insisted. How about the Waltons? Did you see Mary Walton play Martha Washington in our Ladies' Aid Society skit? I thought I'd die laughing when she complained about having to clean George's wooden teeth with a scrub brush and mineral oil. It's possible that Mary is a bit too lively for the Christmas party. Then how about the Butterfields? Charles Butterfield is a world traveler, and he has 100 stories about all sorts of interesting spots. But travel is his only subject, Emmeline complained. It's impossible to get him to talk about anything else. Florence shrugged. Then I'm out of ideas. Maybe you should hire some actors to attend the party and imitate interesting people. Now, that was a thought. Of course, Thomas would never approve, but maybe they could bring in carolers or get the children and their friends to recite some poetry. Oh, Emmeline didn't know. That sort of thing always sounded good in theory, but it rarely panned out in practice. The carolers sang off-key or the children forgot their lines mid-poem. I suppose I better not try to liven up the guest list or I'll never hear the end of it, Emmeline said to Florence as she stood up to check on lunch. Besides, our guests expect a certain milieu. They don't come to mingle with just anyone. They want to be around the right type of person. You mean the boring type? I mean the better type, Emmeline said as she turned to make her way to the kitchen. It's what makes my party the social event of the season. Florence feigned a yawn. Oh, if you say so, dear. Emmeline ignored her sister-in-law's theatrics. Maybe her guests would be less than sparkling, but the party itself, the food, the decorations, the music, would be divine. Every year, Emmeline looked forward to making her menus and planning the decor, even if it was like designing a marvelous set for a play that needed a sharper script and dashing actors. But wasn't that true of life on the whole? In Emmeline's experience, the joy was to be found in anticipating an event. The show itself was always a bit of a disappointment. Quilt along with Emmeline in the Milton Falls Gazette. Christmas rapidly approaches, and many of us are feeling overwhelmed by the long to-do list that confronts us each morning. My days have been filled with wrapping gifts and addressing Christmas cards and perhaps one too many trips to the kitchen to sample one of Cora's Christmas cookies fresh out of the oven. Cora's specialty this time of year is a date nut cookie that's so tasty you won't be able to eat just one. That's why I've told her to hide them the second they're cool enough to be stored. I don't want to put on extra pounds over the holidays, do you? My belief is that if you're reading this column, you're the kind of woman who likes to be involved in life. Isn't that true of every quilter you know? And if you're that kind of woman, you're finding ways to make do during these terrible, hard times. Those of us who have been fortunate enough to keep our spirits up can find a way to give of ourselves during this most wonderful time of the year. Many of you have no plans to imbibe alcohol, even though prohibition has been lifted. May I suggest that you imbibe of the Christmas spirit? No matter how hard times are for us, they're even harder for some of our neighbors. During this giving season, let us ask ourselves what we can do to help the less fortunate. I wonder if you could take a few minutes at this busiest time of the year to stitch a 12.5-inch shooting star block for a quilt that will go to a deserving tyke, one who won't find much else under the tree on Christmas morning. Sister-in-law Florence and the girls at her literary club are doing just that, and she hopes you will too. If you're interested in this worthy project, write to the address below for all the pertinent details. Don't forget to include a 1-cent stamp to ensure a reply. Sitting at the breakfast table and drinking her coffee, Emmeline read over her column in this morning's Gazette with great satisfaction. How inspiring her readers would find her words! Why, she had even inspired herself! After all, who had suffered less during the Depression than Emmeline Grangerfield, and therefore who had the most to give? Even with her dreadfully busy schedule, Emmeline planned to make at least 3 blocks for Florence's charity, maybe as many as 4. She noted with a sigh that the club secretary's address had been left off the end of her column. She'd have to call the editor and ask him to run the information in tomorrow's paper. Meanwhile, his secretary could pass on the address to anyone who called about it. Perhaps she should go ahead and write her next 2 columns, the ones that would run before Christmas, and get them out of the way. She really did have so much to do to get ready for the holidays. What she'd said in her column about wrapping presents had been a bit of a fib. As of yet, she'd barely come up with the shopping list. Thomas was easy enough. He'd be happy with a new hat or a pair of cufflinks. The children, however, were at awkward ages when it came to gifts. Margie was 14, too old for dolls and too young for serious jewelry. 10-year-old Tommy had outgrown toy soldiers and building blocks, and he had just gotten a new bike for his birthday. There had been a written request for a rabbit, but Emmeline had mixed feelings. She'd seen what a rabbit's busy little teeth could do to piano legs and brand-new kid leather shoes. She needed to move on with her day, so she took a sip of her coffee and began making a list of chores and errands. First a trip downtown and some window shopping for inspiration, and then off to Goody's to buy fabric. Perhaps Thomas would be free for lunch and they could discuss the children's gifts. When Emmeline got home, she'd make the blocks for Florence's charity and then write out the pattern for her readers. That would be at least half a column's worth of material. Maybe she could fill the second half with something about party etiquette or the importance of writing thank you notes promptly. Good manners were everything, Emmeline often instructed her children. If you knew how to comport yourself around others, you had very few regrets. As the daughter of a shopkeeper who had married into wealth and society, she knew this better than most people. She hadn't had a mother to teach her how to hold a teacup or properly set a table, but she'd had her Aunt Margaret, who had trained her so well that no one would ever guess Emmeline had married far above her station. It was her duty and privilege to pass this information on to her readers, along with quill patterns and advice about keeping one's stitches straight. After all, how would her readers know which fork to use for the salad course if Emmeline Grangerfield didn't take the trouble to tell them? When the knock at the door sounded late the next morning, Cora, Emmeline's housekeeper, popped her head into the front room where Emmeline was sitting at the secretary, composing her next column. "Are you expecting someone, Mrs. Grangerfield?" Emmeline looked up from her writing. "No, it's probably Florence. Tell her I'm working and she can come in if she promises not to talk to me until I'm done with this paragraph." A moment later, Cora returned, her arms filled with parcels and envelopes. "It was the postman," she announced. "There was too much mail to slip through the slot." "What on earth?" Emmeline crossed the room and took a package from the top of the pile. Weighing hardly anything at all, it was wrapped in brown butcher's paper and addressed to Mrs. Emmeline Grangerfield, Milton Falls, Ohio. Apparently, this was sufficient information for the post office to make the delivery. She looked up at Cora. "Who are the others for?" "All of them are for you, and the return addresses are from all over Milton Falls." There was another knock on the door. Cora set down the packages on the coffee table and went to answer it. She returned with another armload of mail. "Well, that was a delivery boy from the newspaper office. He said women have been dropping them off all morning." "Do you suppose my readers are sending me Christmas presents?" Emmeline asked as she began to unwrap the parcel she was holding. "It seems a little early in the season for that." "You don't suppose?" "They wouldn't have." "Oh, they did. They've sent blocks," she declared, holding up a darling red and white shooting star. "They read my column yesterday morning, and some of them had a block ready to put in the post by the afternoon. I suppose, since the club secretary's address was dropped from the column, it made sense to send them here. Let's open these all up, and then I'll give Florence a call to come and collect them for her club. Be sure to save the names from the return addresses or any notes. I'll want to thank everyone in my column for their generosity." There were 47 blocks, all in different patterns and colors. It was a cornucopia of blocks, Emmeline thought, and then she hurried over to the secretary to jot down the phrase, "cornucopia of blocks," for her next column. When she was done making her note, she picked up the phone. 47 blocks? Florence sounded stunned. "I had no idea your column would get such a response. You know, we were only planning on making 5 quilt tops. Between the blocks my club has made and the ones you received today, we'll have enough for 10 quilts." "Well, that's wonderful. You'll have 5 more than you planned for." "Yes, that's true," Florence replied, but with less enthusiasm than one might have expected. "But don't forget we have to stitch all the blocks together. And what if you get more blocks tomorrow and the day after that?" Oh, I wouldn't worry about that, Emmeline told her. You know how these things are. You read about something in the paper and think you might do it, but if you don't act on the impulse right away, you never get around to it. My guess is that there are hundreds of women around town right this moment thinking, oh, I really should make that block for charity, but they never will. I hope you're right about that, Florence said, only because we don't have much time to get the quilts to Martha Lair's shop for quilting if we're going to deliver them for Christmas. Why don't you come over this afternoon, and we'll see if we can't get at least two tops pieced. Then you can take the rest of the blocks to your club girls, and they can finish up. Oh, I can't this afternoon, I'm afraid. I've got a library board meeting, but I'll come over first thing in the morning. How's that? Perfect, Emmeline exclaimed. I'll have Cora bake one of her famous coffee cakes, and we'll make it a party. Bring some friends if you'd like. I'll call around, Florence said, but I can't promise anything. You know how it is this time of year. Everyone's got 100 things to do. Oh, I know, but this is such a worthy cause. I'm sure people will be lining up to help. After she hung up the phone, Emmeline looked around the room. Should she finish her column and then get to work piecing the quilt tops? Or should the tops come first? Lunch should come first, she decided. One couldn't sew straight stitches on an empty stomach. Glancing at the piles of blocks on the coffee table as she made her way to the kitchen, Emmeline felt the smallest twinge of doubt that 10 quilts could be pieced and quilted between now and Christmas, especially given how much everyone had to do this time of year. Well, if she had to, she could do it herself. She owed her readers that much, didn't she? Honestly, she'd never given her readers much thought before. She knew they were out there, of course. After all, she received at least 10 letters a week with questions and suggestions for topics she might cover in her column, as well as the occasional critique, which she ignored, naturally. Anyone who had a complaint could write her own column. But the 47 shooting star blocks taking up space on her coffee table were concrete evidence that her readers were living, breathing women, women whose hearts had been touched by Emmeline's elegant pleas. Didn't she owe them her best efforts to see the project through? Besides, since Florence's club was committed to making 5 of the quilts, there were only 5 more to make. For her readers' sake, Emmeline would make sure that all 10 quilts were ready to be delivered on Christmas morning. What a wonderful lesson about sharing the spirit of the season it would be, and what a wonderful topic for a column. "'Tis better to give than it is to receive," the column would begin. "How well I learned this lesson as I stitched together 5 quilts for the children of the Methodist Children's Home as the star of the east twinkled in the December sky." By the end of the day, Emmeline was feeling less fondly toward the women who had responded to her clarion call. 47 blocks were one thing, but 172? The newspaper had made 2 more deliveries that afternoon, and now Emmeline was beginning to dread the next morning's mail. "Why can't you wait until after Christmas to make the quilts?" Thomas asked at dinner. "Florence's club can take on the larger part of the task, which was theirs to begin with." "But I can't let down my readers," Emmeline said. "They put aside their own work in order to make blocks for Christmas quilts. They'll be so disappointed if the children don't get the quilts until next year." "Yes, my dear, but the Gazette has a circulation of over 20,000, and your readers are legion. If they do the math, I'm sure the women who made blocks will understand. Any sensible person would." Emmeline sighed. "Oh, I know you're right. It's just that I made such a fuss in my column about the Christmas spirit and the season of giving. Now I feel a bit of a hypocrite. Still, there is the party to prepare for, and all the shopping and wrapping I have to do." "That's right," Thomas agreed. "And if the children have to wait until January for their quilts, they'll be all the more excited when they get them." That was probably the best plan, Emmeline thought, as she dipped her spoon into her tomato aspic. A very sensible decision, as Thomas would say. But if it was such a good idea, why did she suddenly feel so deflated? This afternoon, piecing blocks together as she listened to Christmas carols on the radio, she'd been filled with the spirit of the season. But now her Christmas joy seemed to have evaporated. How she hated that, to feel so excited over something and then to lose that feeling in an instant. "Let's change the subject and talk about champagne," Thomas said, smiling his most charming smile, which, Emmeline had to admit, was exceptionally charming. Now the prohibition has been repealed, I wonder if we can get a case for the party. Someone has to have one squirreled away, don't you think? Emmeline did her best to nudge away thoughts about her readers, who had made their shooting star blocks in good faith, hoping to make some poor orphan's Christmas morning a little brighter. Oh, if only they hadn't been so generous! Really, it was rather annoying, Emmeline thought. Surely they had better things to do than make quilt blocks at the busiest time of year. As for the orphans, well, she'd practically been one herself, so she knew they were used to being disappointed on Christmas morning. After her mother died, when Emmeline was 3, her father had retreated into his work. Christmas mornings were mostly sad affairs, brightened only by the gifts given to her by distant relatives. Once a great aunt she'd never met made her a quilt. It had been hard for Emmeline to believe that someone, somewhere, had thought her deserving of such a gift. But she hadn't been expecting it, she reminded herself now, nor would the children in the Methodist home. When the quilts arrived on their doorstep sometime in January, the surprise would be just as wonderful as if they had appeared under the tree on Christmas morning. Just as wonderful, Emmeline repeated to herself. And then, turning to Thomas, she said, Perhaps we could find 2 cases of champagne. After all, what's a party without it? Over the next 2 weeks, Florence seemed to call and drop by more frequently than usual. I was over this way and I thought I'd pop in for a chat, she'd say, or I just wondered if you had any Christmas cards you needed help addressing. While Emmeline was always happy to see Florence, who really was more like a sister than a sister-in-law, she sensed there were more to these visits than a desire to socialize. You've just seemed blue to me lately, Florence admitted when Emmeline finally asked her what all the extra attention was about. Usually you love this time of year, the shopping and the decorating, thinking about all the wonderful food you won't let yourself eat for fear of putting on 0.5 pound. But here it is, just a few days before your big party, and you don't seem the least bit Christmassy. Emmeline stared at her sister-in-law. It was true, she had been feeling unusually low, when normally she enjoyed the holidays more than anyone. She loved sending out Christmas cards and going downtown to watch the Christmas parade. She loved shopping for gifts and wrapping them with beautiful ribbons and bows. Most of all, she loved decorating for the party. But here it was, December 21st, and she hadn't even asked Cora to bring down the boxes of decorations from the attic. I want to show you something, she told Florence after a moment. Come with me. She led Florence to the hall closet and opened the door. Look up there, she said, pointing at the shelf above the coat rack. All those parcels are shooting star blocks made by my readers. Even after the paper ran your club's address, they still kept sending them to me. I've got dozens more upstairs and a basket filled with clippings. I asked Cora to make sure to collect all the names from the return addresses so I could thank everyone personally in my column. Now I suppose I won't have to write that column until mid-January. But we all agreed it was for the best to wait until the new year to make the quilts, Florence insisted. The girls in my club loved the idea that our little charity project bloomed into such a grand endeavor. I know, Emmeline said as she closed the closet door. But when I wrote that column asking for blocks, I felt like I truly understood the meaning of Christmas. It's not big parties or trees loaded down with presents, but taking the time to do something kind for a complete stranger. Oh, I know that sort of thing has been said 1,000 times before, but for the first time in my life, I felt it in my heart. So I suppose I'm just disappointed, in myself, I mean, that I didn't follow through. But you did follow through. You wrote the column, and as a result, we have close to 300 blocks, enough to make quilts for every child in the children's home. Florence took Emmeline's hand. For you to somehow let your Christmas be ruined by this, well, it doesn't make sense. And I know your readers wouldn't want you to lose your Christmas joy. They love you, Emmeline. Emmeline brightened a little at the thought that this was true. I'll tell you what, Florence continued. We'll do the same thing next year for the orphanage over in Ashland, only we'll get started in September. The only problem this year was our timing was off. True enough, Emmeline agreed, and she agreed as well that Florence's plan was a good one. Still, I wonder if the children in the Milton Falls orphanage will get anything for Christmas this year, since they won't be getting our quilts. Oh, of course they'll get something. Why, all sorts of clubs and churches help out this time of year. The children will get loads of wonderful presents. But not quilts, Emmeline said, and that's a shame. Florence took her hand. It is a shame. I absolutely agree. But it's not a catastrophe. Now, I still haven't gotten your gift, so let's go have some tea, and you can give me ideas for what to shop for. Mostly what I want is for Santa to not bring Tommy a bunny, Emmeline said as she led Florence to the parlor. I fear, however, that Thomas has a different opinion on the matter. I fear you're right, Florence said, laughing. Darling, I recommend you hide all your expensive shoes. I love the day before Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, Eve, Tommy declared as he stood in front of the tree in the living room, his eyes shining. It means Christmas is almost here, but you still have 2 days to be excited about it. I like the day after Christmas best, his sister said. That's when you get to show off your presents to all of your friends. I do hope I get a charm bracelet, one that has a tiny little Ferris wheel on it. Annie Dallas has a Ferris wheel charm on hers, and I practically swoon every time I see it. Emmeline smiled to herself. Through a bit of sleuthing, she'd learned that charm bracelets were all the rage with Margie's set, so now there was one wrapped and waiting under the tree. She would have to send Cora out to Goody's in the morning in search of a Ferris wheel charm. If Goody's didn't have one, perhaps Schaefer's fine jewelry? She herself would be too exhausted to go anywhere in the morning. Preparations for the party had kept Emmeline occupied practically from dawn to dusk the past few days, and she was already looking forward to collapsing on the couch the minute the last guest left. I suppose I should go upstairs and get dressed, Emmeline told the children, pushing herself up from her chair. Cora is getting dinner ready for you in the kitchen, and after dinner you need to go straight upstairs for your baths. I'll come get you when it's time to say hello to the guests. Can we listen to the radio in Dad's study? Tommy asked. Buck Rogers is on tonight. I like Jack Benny better, Margie said. But still, can we listen, Mother? I suppose that would be all right. Just keep the volume down. Emmeline ascended the stairs to her room, leaving her children to debate the merits of Buck Rogers in the 25th century versus those of the Jack Benny program. She herself preferred Betty and Bob, though she'd never let Tommy and Margie listen to such a silly soap opera. Still, it was rather fun to become absorbed in other people's problems instead of her own, and gossiping with Florence about the show's characters as though they were real people was a guilt-free pleasure. Cora had readied her dress and hung it on a stand by the window. Oh, it was lovely, Emmeline thought as she crossed the room and slid her hand along the dress's satiny folds. It was even a bit daring, some might say, with its low-cut back and draped neckline. She'd almost had it made in white for a more Grecian effect, but now she was glad she decided on the red. Red was so much more Christmassy. And besides, she looked fabulous in red. Tonight she'd be the belle of her own ball. By the time she had dressed, chosen her jewelry, and fixed her hair, she only had a few minutes before the guests would start to arrive. Emmeline hurried back downstairs. Stealing one last moment to compose herself, she made her way to the Christmas tree and stood before it, cataloging all of the marvelous decorations they'd collected over the years, the crystal ornaments from Germany and the glass Santas and pine cones. Maybe she didn't have the Christmas spirit this year, but she had a beautiful tree and a lovely dress, and her party was sure to be a smashing success. That would have to be enough. When a knock sounded at the front door, Emmeline took a deep breath and put on her most hospitable smile. I'll get it, Cora, she called as she made her way to the foyer. Throwing open the door, she greeted her guests. There's room at the inn, so please come in. It took a moment for her to comprehend the scene in front of her. She'd expected to see a crowd of dapper men in overcoats and women in furs. Instead, here was Florence and, well, who exactly were these people? Did Florence decide to pitch in by hiring extra serving staff? Really, that wasn't the sort of thing you sprung on someone just as a party was about to begin. Merry Christmas, Emmeline, Florence greeted her. I hope you like your gift. Emmeline took a step back from the door, as though she half expected to be stampeded. What do you mean, my gift? These women are my gift? Yes, indeed they are. Florence grinned, clearly pleased with herself. She turned to the women. "Everything is ready for you in the nursery, so if you'll go on up, I'll join you in just a few minutes." She stepped aside to let the women pass. "I don't know everyone's name yet, but we'll sort that out later. Ladies, this is Mrs. Grangerfield." One by one, the women went past Emmeline, each greeting her briefly. "Good evening, Mrs. Grangerfield." And, "You look lovely tonight, Mrs. Grangerfield." Emmeline stopped counting after 12 of them had gone inside, but there seemed to be nearly 24 women, complete and total strangers, walking into her house as though they were welcome guests. "What on earth, Florence?" she said after the last woman had made her way to the stairs. "What are they going to do in the nursery?"
"We'll make Christmas presents, of course," Florence told her.
"Oh, Thomas, there you are. I believe our surprise has come off without a hitch." Emmeline turned to see her husband looking very handsome in his tuxedo.
"Will someone please explain to me what's going on here?"
Thomas came over and kissed her cheek. "Florence wanted to give you an early Christmas present."
"But what is my present?" Emmeline asked with a stomp of her foot. "Tell me."
Florence took her by the arm. "Let's go up to the nursery. Thomas, you can greet the guest, can't you?" she asked as she began pulling Emmeline up the stairs. "We'll be back down in a moment." Thomas bowed.
"Of course. Take your time."
"Will you please explain what's going on?" Emmeline demanded as she followed Florence upstairs.
"My head is about to explode."
"Well, we wouldn't want that right before your party, now would we?"
Florence reached the landing and turned to pull Emmeline up the last step.
"It's just that you've been so unhappy," Florence continued. "Thomas and I were chatting in his office yesterday morning about how to best cheer you up for Christmas, when he said the most marvelous thing. If only we could get everyone who reads Emmeline's column to sew up those quilts so they could be delivered to the children by Christmas, I bet that would lift her spirits."
"Well, I couldn't have agreed more. The problem was how to let your readers know we needed them. And then I remembered what you told me about having Cora clip all the names and addresses from the parcels your reader sent you."
Florence motioned toward the nursery. "So what we have here are 21 of the women who sent you blocks. Cora gave me the addresses she collected, and the girls from my club and I went door to door. Everyone we asked said yes. Isn't that wonderful? I would have knocked on a few more doors, but I was afraid we wouldn't have enough room."
"Those are my readers?" Emmeline stared at her sister-in-law. "And they're here to sew?"
"Not just to sew," Florence said. "They're here to quilt the quilts, too. We gathered up 4 frames from here and there, and we think by tomorrow night we can have 31 quilts ready to take to the orphanage on Christmas morning, 1 for every child."
Emmeline sank down to the top step.
"The quilts will be done?"
"I believe so," Florence said, sitting down next to her. "I hope you don't mind if we come back tomorrow to finish them up."
I don't mind a bit," Emmeline stammered. "I could even help."
"Of course you'll help. Tomorrow. Tonight you have party guests to attend to. Now, let's quickly go say hello to the girls before I send you back downstairs." The women were already unpacking their sewing things when Emmeline and Florence arrived in the nursery. Emmeline opened her mouth to say something, but no words would come. All she could do was fold her hands over her heart and shake her head in wonder.
"Merry Christmas, Mrs. Grangerfield," one of the women called, and then there was a chorus of Merry Christmases, and the woman closest to Emmeline added, "I can't think of a better way to spend Christmas Eve, Eve. Can you?"
She was still wearing her coat, a shabby, shapeless old thing, and a hat that had seen its fair share of foul weather, but her kind smile warmed Emmeline's heart.
"No, I can't," Emmeline told her, wondering why everything seemed so blurry and out of focus. "I really can't."
"Oh, don't cry, Emmeline," Florence said, laughing. "Your guests are starting to arrive."
Emmeline dabbed at her eyes and smiled at the women gathered around her.
"Ladies, why don't we start out the evening by going downstairs for some refreshments? My stitches are always straighter when I've had something to eat."
"Are you sure, Mrs. Grangerfield?" the woman in the shabby coat asked. "We don't want to interrupt your party."
"Interrupt?" Emmeline exclaimed, taking the woman's arm as she led her out of the room. "Why, you'll be the belles of the ball."
"It's high time you invited some interesting people to one of these things," Florence whispered into Emmeline's ear. "I might actually enjoy myself this year."
"Why, I always invite the best people to my Christmas party," Emmeline replied. "That's why it's the social event of the season."
Quilt along with Emmeline in the Milton Falls Gazette. The Shooting Star block is a simple block, 8 half-square triangles and 8 solid squares that you can stitch up in no time at all. Anyone who's familiar with the generosity of quilt makers will not be surprised to hear that the women of Milton Falls, Ohio, stitched enough Shooting Star blocks to make quilts for each of the 31 children who live in the Methodist Children's Home on Washington Street. Oh, reader, if you could have seen those children's faces when we delivered the quilts on Christmas morning, I don't think you'd ever do anything but make quilts day and night for every child in the world who needs one. So, let's begin sewing, shall we?
A production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Learn more about the Quilt Fiction podcast online at quiltfiction.com.